Guess Boogie Podcast contains explicit language and content that may not be suitable for some listeners. Listener discretion is advised. Hello, welcome to the Guess Boogie Podcast, where two guys scare each other with stories of the paranormal encounters, urban legends, and true crime from around the world. I'm Andres.
And I'm Kevin.
And this is the podcast where we put tajin and lime on everything.
And today's compliment is, you look good today.
Oh, wow. So we're doing that?
I got it from Mike's mic.
Yes, I realized that.
We're sluts for YouTube videos.
Yeah, that's pretty much all we do nowadays, just watch YouTube videos.
Yeah. I did want to mention, I did end up contradicting myself in the last episode, so just a little quick correction, I'm dumb. Don't expect 100% accuracy. Also, I've been improving the audio quality, so if you guys notice that the last two episodes sound a little better, you're welcome.
What if everybody thinks they sound worse?
Then you're wrong.
Send us an email.
Send us an email.
Just complaint. Send us an email anyways. Just do it. So, very busy weekend. I was in a wedding.
Yep.
And I drank a lot of wine slushies. So, there's that. Ate a lot.
Mm-hmm.
Had some friends' cookies.
Mm-hmm.
Like Friends, the show that was the theme of the wedding, kind of. So that was fun.
Yes. Congratulations, Whitney and Alan.
Congratulations, Whitney and Alan. They are, I think, on honeymoon right now in Alaska.
Yep.
So we'll see how it goes. They were supposed to have gone to Iceland, but no country in the world wants us now because we have no...
self-control.
We have no self-control, and we have not had any mask mandates or anything, and people are just like, ew, you guys are dirty. You can't come into our country.
Yikes.
So, there's that.
They're not wrong.
Yeah, I agree.
Is there anything else that you wanted to bring up before we jump on it?
Why are the cats on top of the entertainment center? They're so annoying.
I'm going to cut that out.
It's like they know we're recording, so they're like, let's fuck shit up. My name is Venus, and I'm here to fuck shit up. That's what she does. And then Leo says, I'm Leo. And then he fucking runs around in circles and knocks shit over.
He does do that. Also, I did want to say something before we jump into the story, because I just checked. I go first this week.
Uh-huh.
We wanted to give a big thanks to all of our friends that have been supporting us. Specifically your friend Ashley, and then my friend Ashley, and then my friend Allison, and then our friend Cassidy and Whitney.
Wait, Ashley Anderson?
Yeah.
She's great.
Thank you for the support.
By Mixed Madness.
By Art Pop on iTunes.
By Ashley Anderson's Mixed Madness label on mixedmadness.com.
T.
She's got a fucking badass B shirt. She donates $3 to the B fund. It's for bees.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, this one's free.
That's not what I meant, but okay. So, I start.
Okay, what are we talking about today?
Oh, babe. So, for anyone that watched the news or any sort of like media during the late 90s, early 2000s, this story is about the Trevi Andrade clan. Do you know it?
Trevi as in Gloria Trevi?
Yes.
Okay, yes.
Okay, so my sources are YouTube videos by Univision from El Gordo y la Flaca talk show, YouTube videos by La Caja Fuerte de VHS about the Primer Impacto special de La Gloria al Infierno and the Cristina special, A YouTube video by Producciones Telemar S.A. de C.V. covering the documentary Escándalo en el Mundo del Espectáculo. A YouTube video by Secta Traviana. A YouTube video by Luna Martinez. An article on biography.com. An article on El Imparcial. Wikipedia and my mom. My mom helped out.
Your mom's a queen.
She does. Or she is.
Can I say something?
What?
So earlier I had Nashville Hot Lays, mm-hmm. and I keep burping, and it tastes like bacon bits, and it's really gross.
Bacon bits, like?
Like the fake bacon bits back gross. From back in the day. Not even the real bacon bits. It's like the fake ones.
You're gross.
Yes.
Close your mouth.
No.
Okay, so to those that don't know, Gloria Trevi is an artist. She's a music artist from Mexico. She was... Well, I'll get into it, okay? So, Gloria de Los Ángeles Treviño Ruiz was born on the 15th of February, 1968, in Monterrey, Nuevo León, Mexico. In 1980, at the age of 12, she moved to Mexico City to pursue a career in the music industry by herself. Like, she just up and left. Her parents had divorced at the age of 10, or when she was at the age of 10, so by 12, she had left. She got by singing and dancing in the street, teaching aerobics, and working at a taco stand. In 1984, at the age of 16, she met Sergio Andrade, who was 28 at the time, who became her mentor. So, a quick history on Sergio Andrade. He was born on the 26th of November, 1955, in Coatzacoalcos, Veracruz, Mexico, to Mexican-Portuguese parents. He and his family moved to Mexico City halfway through his primaria school year. Primaria is primary school, so like elementary school for American audiences. He studied piano and music theory and eventually had his big break in 1977 when he composed a song for RCA Records. He then went on to arrange music and direct recordings for Veronica Castro, which was an up-and-coming recording artist at the time after having starred in telenovelas. He became an independent music composer and producer in 1981, and he gained recognition after working with some of Mexico's up-and-coming pop stars, such as Lucero and Yuri.
Yuri's a bad bitch. Absolutely. I fucking love her.
While I was doing the research, I was just listening to their music, and I was like, ooh.
I'm always going to remember that novela with Yuri and Chayanne back in the 90s. Man, that shit was like peak.
What was the name of it?
I don't remember, but it was Yuri and Chayanne, and that novela, I was like... 5, and I would be like, can you put my novela on? Like a 5-year-old, like, I need to watch my shows. Yuri and Chayanne, please.
Wow. I just know, I don't know much about both of those, but I know that they were, like, some of their music is still considered, well, like, one of the most, how do you say, like, the most memorable or biggest hits of the time of ever, I guess.
Yes, correct. Because
they were, like, yeah. Okay, so the artist Lucero initially got her big break after starring in the telenovela called Chispita. She eventually became a singer. She worked with Sergio Andrade, and she released her debut album at the age of 13. So Sergio wanted to become her manager full-time, seeing the potential for her to become an international star. As a minor, her parents would have allowed Sergio full legal guardianship, which is something that Lucero's mom didn't want to give up. Basically, Lucero's mom still wanted to be her manager. They worked on one more additional album together before rumors grew that Sergio had fallen in love with Lucero, being only 15 at the time. In order to avoid problems, the record company released another of Lucero's album without Sergio's involvement. As a form of retaliation, Sergio held a contest to find the next Lucero, was what he called it. Gloria Trevi was the winner of the contest, so that's how they met. So this is when Sergio and Gloria meet. She becomes a member of the girl group Boquitas Pintadas. It's translated as Little Mouths with Lipstick in 1986. The group was composed of these 5 teen girls hoping to break into the music industry, all managed by Sergio. One of the members of the group was 15-year-old Maria Raquel Portillo, professionally known as Mari Boquitas, who was married to Sergio Andrade at the time.
Disgusting.
She was 15.
That's disgusting, man. These fucking pedophiles are everywhere. Oh, and by the way, while you were talking, I looked up the name of the novela, and it's called Volver a Empezar, and it ran from 1994 to 1995. So I was literally 3 and 4 when this novela came out, and I still remember it.
And you're demanding it.
And I want the DVDs. So If anybody is thinking of sending us something for Christmas, please send me the DVD set.
Or if you got it on VHS, I'm just kidding.
Fuck up.
So at the time, pop music groups were huge in Mexico, like such as Timbiriche and Menudo. They were like the boy or girl bands of the 1980s and 1990s. From these pop music groups, it was the start for many of Latin pop's most successful singers.
Thalía.
Paulina Rubio. Ricky Martin. Like all of these big people that are like still relevant today, that's how their career started. And like these...
That's how they're what?
Boy bands, careers.
Oh.
Okay, so Gloria decided to become a solo artist with Sergio as her manager. She released her debut album in 1989 titled ¿Qué hago aquí? Translated as What Am I Doing Here? Which was an instant success. From 1991 to 1995, she released an additional 4 albums, all being produced in their entirety by Sergio Andrade. Gloria became an instant hit for the youth in Latin America. She was often nicknamed the Madonna of Mexico. Most of her music was very risque and consisted of sexualized, provocative, and political topics. Her lyrics had many sexual innuendos, but ultimately, according to her, her music was meant to expose hypocrites. She was very outspoken on subjects that were considered taboo in Mexico at the time, and by extension, that are somewhat still taboo today, such as religion, drug trafficking, the upper class, Mexican machismo, prostitution, AIDS, abortion, and war crimes.
Fuck Mexican machismo.
Dude, she was... In one interview, she was talking shit to one of the biggest drug dealers at the time. She's brave.
Kate del Castillo shook.
Being so outspoken with these topics further brought her recognition. Girls her age began dressing like her with one of her songs, Pelo Suelto, translated as like free hair or unkept hair, being a sort of anthem of hers. Like a big fuck you to the more proper or posh expectations of girls during the 1980s and the 1990s.
I Whip My Hair Back and Forth by Willow Smith.
But
90s. Along that vein, yes. It was like very... I don't give a fuck. I'm going to do what I want to do. Mm-hmm. I'm going to let my hair down. Fuck these motherfuckers. I'm a girl. Girl power.
Yes. And I think that's what was the appeal from many girls at the time. Like, right. One of the lyrics was, I don't care how long my hair is, even if I sweep the ground. I'm like, okay, Quinn.
I whip my hair back and forth.
Her look was very, like, pop punk and, like, very rebellious. She had, like, ripped leggings and, you know, denim and hairspray. You know, even her music videos portrayed some of these themes. She would often play submissive roles in them, sometimes in dependent or abusive relationships. And in some of them, she would always come out, or like halfway through the video, she'd be like, fuck this, and just like break shit and be like, I'm not going to follow the rules. I'm going to live my life. Which was, for girls, it's like, hell yeah. Like, especially for one of the music videos, it was like in an abusive relationship where the wife was like sweeping where... in the kitchen where the husband was like having fun and hanging out with his friends in the other room. So she like let her hair down and she like threw shit in the kitchen and then she showed up into the living room and she poured beer all over him. I was like, okay, Quan. Some examples were Con los ojos cerrados, translated as with closed eyes, Me siento tan sola, translated as I feel so lonely, and La papa sin catsup, translated as the french fry without ketchup. Do you ever feel like a french fry without ketchup? That feeling when you're a french fry without ketchup?
The thing is that these songs are so good, and then you say them in English, and I'm like, what the fuck?
Yes, even La Papa Sin Catsup, one of the lyrics is like, I'm a french fry without ketchup, I'm a nail without dirt, and the dirt is you. I was like, oh, wow.
She's talking about the dirt under her fingernails.
Yes.
Yes. So you're literally translating the names of the song, but not figuratively.
Yes.
Yeah. So we just want everybody to know that these songs are actually really good.
That moment when you're a french fry without ketchup. Although she was known as Madonna of Mexico, she could more accurately be described as the Britney Spears of Mexico, too, because of her appeal to a younger generation of girls. This is where we run into half speculation, half varying experiences. I do want to say that there is a content warning for sexual assault and child abuse. So, around the time that Gloria went solo and became a rising star in the music scene, she began recruiting and luring young unsuspecting girls to join her and Sergio to be part of their crew, usually as backup dancers or backup singers. So once she got a hold of the girls, they were interested, and Sergio would speak with her parents, promising them fame and that he would make them a star like he did with Lucero, Yuri, and Gloria. The parents would eventually agree for the girls to go on tour with Sergio and Gloria. Basically, they were giving up their rights.
Yeah, they were signing over. I remember, I think there was a, we were watching that that documentary, right?
Are they fighting?
Yes, they're fighting.
Ignore them. Continue. I told you.
Where they would like sign their, they would like sign their guardianship over, because mm-hmm. Sergio would be like, I can't take your daughter out of the country without you signing your guardianship over to me. Yeah. So he was like their guardian at that point. Mm-hmm. And he was like taking them, and he was their like parent guardian. Their parents weren't their parents anymore. It was so weird. It was very weird. It was very culty. Mm-hmm. Very, very culty.
Yeah. The group consisted of about around 12 girls, more or less, all usually in the age range of 12 to 18. Like I said, the parents would eventually agree for the girls to go on tour with Sergio and Gloria. All these girls saw Gloria Trevi as their idol that they wanted to live up to. They were promised fame and money. So none of these girls basically knew what they were getting themselves into. They were all, once they were basically in his custody, they were beaten, they were abused, they were psychologically abused and starved sometimes. One of them, Mari Boquitas, that I mentioned earlier, she mentions that she was forced to eat her own throw up at one point. Just very, like, fucked up shit. They would often participate in concerts, but as soon as the show would end, they would be run off the stage and locked in a hotel room. Only Gloria was allowed to speak to the press or to publicists. Sergio made the girls write to their parents, telling them that they were all safe and that they were all having fun, and Gloria would then review the letters before mailing them out. Of the many victims of this clan, the accounts vary, but all of them have the shared experience that they were sexually assaulted by Sergio Andrade, and this went on for years. In 1996, Aline Hernandez wrote and published a book titled La Gloria por el Infierno, translated as Glory to Hell. It's a play on words, since Gloria translates as glory, but is often used, or is being used here to refer to Gloria Trevi. She was allegedly married to Sergio when she was 13 in 1988. In her book, she details everything that she lived through in the Trevi Andrade clan, where she was promised a career as an artist. The release of this book caused a huge domino effect on the whole case. On the 13th of October, 1998, the Spanish state delegation of the Secretary of Foreign Affairs contacts the Yapor family in Chihuahua, Mexico, that they had a baby registered to the son of Karina Yapor that had been abandoned in a hospital in Madrid. According to the records, the baby, called Francisco Ariel Yapor Gomez, had been abandoned at the hospital by a woman who was later identified as Maria Raquel Portillo, Mari Boquitas. On the 24th of March, 1999, the Yapor family files a formal complaint of kidnapping and aggravated rape with the Procuraduría de Justicia, which is like the state attorney or Department of Justice for the state of Chihuahua, against Gloria Trevi, Sergio Andrade, María Raquel Portillo, and Gabriela Holguín, on behalf of Karina Yapor. Honestly, I couldn't find any information on Gabriela Holguín. So, and she was only on one source, but, you know, I just decided to include her. Whatevs. So this launches the whole search for the clan, where Interpol and over 100 different countries were involved. Basically, they were looking for them. And they knew that they were being searched for. Like, they went into hiding, they were skipping around all these countries. I mean, one day they were in Mexico, and the next they were dropping off a baby in Spain. So, in late 1999, the clan takes the girls to Spain, as I mentioned, and then to Chile, where not long after that, they moved to Argentina. In Argentina is where the girls eventually escape and return to their homes in Mexico. And because they were being chased after, they were just like, you know what, let them go. On the 13th of January 2000, the remaining members of the clan are found and arrested in Rio de Janeiro, Brazil. The arrests cause a legal battle between Brazilian and Mexican prosecutors. A Brazilian federal court ruled that the case against the three required extensive investigation before they were considered for extradition back to Mexico. While the three waited in a Brazilian prison, Gloria has revealed to be pregnant for the second time. And we'll get to the story for the first time. A DNA test confirms that Sergio is the father of the baby. On the 20th of March 2001, Karina Yapor releases her book titled Revelaciones, translated as Revelations, where she shared what she lived through in the clan. My mom actually has this book. And when I was talking to her about this case, she sent me a picture and she's like, it's right here. I was like, wow. Mail it to me. Because this story was fucking huge. Like, the release of this book caused a media frenzy where the victims of the Klan all are interviewed by some of the highest rated news outlets and tabloid outlets in Latin America, one of them being TV Azteca. And we'll get to them in a second. On the 21st of December 2002, Brazilian and Mexican authorities came to an agreement after almost 3 years in a Brazilian federal prison. They were to be formally extradited and charged in Mexico. Gloria's son, Angel Gabriel, who had been born on the 18th of February 2002, would go to live with his maternal grandmother. It was alleged that while on the run, Gloria had also given birth to her first child, Ana Dalai, whom they had allegedly left to die. Authorities were investigating and also attempting to charge the couple with negligence and homicide, but with no evidence and no body of the baby ever found, these charges were eventually dropped. Without any solid evidence, prosecutors were having trouble to prove these alleged crimes. Gloria and Mari were ultimately acquitted of all charges by a Mexican court on the 21st of September 2004 with citations of lack of evidence.
Wow.
So they were just like, get out of here. You're free.
They walked out.
Mm-hmm. On the 24th of March 2005, Sergio Andrade was formally charged and sentenced for corruption of minors, kidnapping, and aggravated rape. He was sentenced for 7 years and 10 months in a federal prison and a fine of 3,591 pesos, which was around $319 US, and for the auxiliary fund for the administration of justice, and sentenced to pay 1,061,500 pesos, which was around $94,000, to be paid to Karina Yapor for moral damages.
Wow.
In 2007, an appellate judge acquitted him of the crime of corruption of minors. He then also tried to appeal the other two charges to prove his innocence, but they were denied. Sergio Andrade was eventually released from prison in late 2007. So that's basically the version that the news outlets know.
Right.
But there's a lot more. So just to tie loose ends up, in total, there were an estimated of 12 girls that Sergio had held against their will. It is believed that 9 children were fathered from this group of girls and Sergio. Remember that these were like girls.
12-year-olds?
There's like 12-year-old children and they were all having kids with him. They were Angel Gabriel and Ana Dalai from Gloria Trevi, Valentina from Carla de la Puesta, Milton from Carola de la Puesta, Maria Miel de Wendy from Wendy Castelo, Francisco Ariel from Karina Yapor, Victor Isaac from Marlene Calderon, Antonia and Sofia from Sonia Reyes. In 2010, Mari Boquitas appeared on the talk show El Gordo y la Flaca, where she retells everything that she lived through in the Klan. Since she was accused of being involved in the death of Gloria's daughter, Ana Dalai, she retells her side of the story. And she does strictly mention Liliana Regueiro will know more about the whereabouts of the girl. And she says, I'll leave it at that. So, basically, here's a quick version. On the 13th of April, 1999, the Klan members were getting ready to watch a movie while they were still in Rio de Janeiro. The children of the Klan are all in one room that everyone had access to. Mari goes to rent the film, where she, and when she comes back, someone goes to check on the kids, and they scream and say that the girl isn't breathing. They all run into the room and see that the girl was blue and appeared to have been asphyxiated. So Gloria is just inconsolable. Mari is accused of being involved, but denies it outright. From what it is believed to be true, the girl's body was thrown into a river by the orders of Sergio himself. Ana Dalai was 33 days old at the time of her alleged death, and her body was never found. And to make matters worse, they were renting Home Alone 2.
What the fuck?
Just thought I might share that info.
Oh no.
You guys didn't learn from the first one how terrible that was? Anyway, so Liliana Regueiro was later accused of getting rid of Ana Dalai's body per the order of Sergio. She was detained in prison for 5 years while the investigation was done, but eventually released due to lack of evidence. So basically, there's no record of this girl. Even though everyone's saying, yeah, she was real. They're like, no, she's not, because there's no birth certificate, there's no body. What are you talking about? Bye. It is theorized that Karina Yapor killed the girl out of jealousy that Sergio cared more about Ana Dalai than she did the other girl's kids, especially since she was allegedly forced to give up her own child in Spain. Makes sense?
Wow.
Media outlets went in on Gloria Trevi during the break of this case, basically accusing her of being the ringleader or the mastermind of the entire Klan. Some of the victims reported that Gloria and Mari were Sergio's second in command, while others say that they were victims just as much as they were. There is a theory that TV Azteca, which is one of the biggest multimedia conglomerates in Mexico, may have been involved in spreading the story and scandalizing it. One of the top journalists, Patty Chapoy, was believed to have been having an extramarital affair with Sergio Andrade before he had met Gloria Trevi, so he ended their relationship when they met. It's theorized that she was heavily involved in Aline Hernandez's
book. Wait. Was this a same-sex relationship?
Patty Chapoy and Sergio Andrade.
Patty Chapoy. I was like, wait, what the fuck is going on? Holy shit.
Yeah, she is one of Mexico's most, like, biggest journalists, I guess.
Okay. You know what? I've seen Sergio Andrade before, and he's ugly as fuck. What are all these women doing?
Well, they were girls, so they were not with him willingly. That's the problem. That he was 13. These were 13-year-old girls that wanted, like, fame. And, I mean, if you have, like, your favorite artist and they say, they approach you and they say, hey, I can, if you would you like to join my, like, entourage? Would you like to be my backup dancer or backup singer? You have such a great voice, blah, blah, blah. You know, they hype her up and she's like, oh my God, yeah. And then they take you to that. These were very much victims. So, like I said, it's theorized that she was heavily involved in Alina Hernandez's book publishing and why the media was primarily attacking Gloria and taking some of the blunt and blame off of Sergio. This was further reinforced when in an interview, Gloria says this. And just as some background, Patty Chapoy owns and invests in a large electronic appliance store chain in Mexico and works for one of the biggest television companies in Mexico as well. So Gloria says this in an interview in reference to clearing her name of the accusations. So I'm going to say it in Spanish first because this was like my best attempt at translating it because I had trouble with it.
Okay.
So, no me he volado ni media demanda de Hacienda. Yo tengo que pagar mis impuestos. Yo no tengo 400 y tantas mil tiendas por toda la República Mexicana de electrodomésticos. Ni tengo una compañía de televisión a mis pies para que me digan lo que yo quiera que digan. Y ahora, sí que al que caiga el saco, pues que se lo ponga. So, translating it, the closest thing I got was, I don't owe anything to Hacienda, which is the Revenue Service of Mexico, kind of like the IRS. I have to pay my taxes. I do not have 400 and such thousand electronic appliances stores throughout Mexico, nor do I have a television company at my feet to say what I want them to say. So if the shoe fits, put it on. Basically, she was, I don't know the word, indirectas?
AKA subtweeting?
Yes, she was like, tweeting. She was subtweeting in real life to Patty Chapoy. In the mid-2010s, she was sued by TV Azteca for defamation.
Who was?
Gloria Trevi.
Okay.
Some sources say they settled out of court, while others say that the case is still ongoing. They never cited what defamation they were saying, but after that little interview, basically, like, everyone knows. Everyone knows that Patty Chapoy is somehow involved in this.
Look, I'm looking at pictures of her right now, and I have never seen a more Mexican-looking Karen in my life. She is peak Karen. Like, you just, ooh, I don't want to look at her. Exiting out of that tab. Exiting out of that tab. She okay. Just looks rude.
In 2015, Vice, you know Vice?
No. Yes, okay. Obviously.
Vice reported that Sergio now lives in Cuernavaca, Morelos, in Mexico, and that he makes a living as a server in a restaurant.
He fucking deserves less.
After learning this information, if you are interested, you should watch the music videos and read the lyrics to these songs that I mentioned before. After knowing everything that she lived through, I really think that she was trying to use her music to reach out to anyone that was willing to help her get out of the situation with Sergio and the dynamic of their relationship. No one knows for sure how involved she was in the clan, whether she was a co-conspirator or whether she was also another of Sergio's victims. Aline Hernandez was quoted as saying, "I think Gloria arrived as innocent as the rest of us. If Gloria contributed to all of this, it is because he made her ill. He turned her, trained her, or educated her in his way."
I believe it. And I mean, didn't we watch that documentary on Netflix with Gloria Trevi? Was it on Netflix?
That was like years ago.
Yeah, it was really good though.
The thing that I didn't like about it is that it very much ends just when she meets Sergio Andrade. Like, it was her, like, rise to fame story where she's like, you know, rags to riches type of thing, where it's like, it tells her story of how she was a little girl and how she went to Mexico City and, like, worked her ass off. And then finally, like, meets Sergio Andrade, who's supposed to, like, help her become this huge pop star. And she does. For the most part, she does. even today, like, she's still, like, after she got out of prison, she went on tour. I think she had like 40 different shows in the United States and Mexico. She has released a lot of albums even afterwards. The funny thing is that anytime someone mentions like what exactly happened in this clan, she always just like breaks down and starts crying and says stuff like, she mentions God a lot. I think that maybe she just doesn't want to talk about it because she's traumatized, or maybe she's trying to hide something. That's what I picked up from it. That was the story of the Trevi Andrade clan.
So,
what?
I remember there being a scene in that movie where the little girl dies in the other room.
Yeah.
And I'm looking up the movie right now, and it looks like it pretty much goes all the way up to the early 2000s when they got arrested.
Mm-hmm.
I think you might have fallen asleep watching that documentary.
Really?
Yes.
Maybe I'm thinking about something else, but I remember specifically the documentary.
This one?
What's the name of it?
Gloria.
Honestly, I don't remember. I think it was that one, but all I remember it ending it as was where she meets him and she was like, oh my god, a record deal, you know?
No, because I remember her getting... So it shows her going on TV and being crazy. And then, like, Sergio Andrade slapped the shit out of her. And he's like, don't you get on there and act like a fucking whore. And then, like, everybody liked it. So he's like, okay, never mind. You can go on TV and do that.
Wow.
I like, almost 100% remember that. Like, I'm seeing that scene in my head right now.
That's scary.
So obviously we need to... This is another movie.
Yeah, we'll rewatch it.
Add it to the list.
We finally watched...
Mothman Prophecies.
The Mothman Prophecies. So that was episode one. And we'll just go from there.
We need to start keeping like a list.
So that was my story.
Thank you. Wow. That seems to happen a lot, by the way.
What?
That whole thing about really famous people. They're like pedophiles or whatever.
Oh my god. While I was researching this, there was a lot of people like mentioning the similarities between him and R. Kelly.
Yes.
Fucked up.
Yep. And like, and then... Okay.
Continue.
And like I was telling you, that Brazilian lady, that star, that artist, that she like is a Christian artist and has like her own church, I think. And then she ran for office. And then come to find out, like, she fucks her kids.
What the fuck?
Yes. So she has, like, group A kids that she adopted. And then she has group B, which is, like, her main kids with her husband is group A. Group B is, like, 40 other kids that she adopted that were poor. And supposedly, the like, group B kids never, like, they never made it out of poverty. Like, they could barely eat. She never fed them.
Oh my god.
She just adopted them for nothing, just to look good in front of the media. It's like an ongoing case right now. Like, this is happening real time right now. It's all coming out. Shit. She killed her husband. She hired a hitman to kill her husband. She's being expelled from the place in government she holds. Like, she's getting kicked out.
Insane.
Hey. Wow.
So that's my depressing story. That feeling when you're nothing but a potato chip. Or no, nothing. That feeling when you're a french fry without ketchup.
Speaking of potato chips, what is your favorite potato chip?
I don't know. I'm kind of a fan of sour cream and onion with hot sauce.
I like Ruffles cheddar and sour cream.
Sick.
Those are the fucking best.
Okay, so just as palate cleansers, what do we got? Honestly, I don't know what your story is, so this is a mystery to me.
Well, I told you like four times, but you forget, and you kept asking me, and then I was like, I don't remember what my story is. My story is about Karen Silkwood.
Well, hold on. Okay, so as some palate cleansers I have written down.
Okay.
Why does everyone think I hate avocados?
Because you hate tomatoes and onions and peppers. And what's the other thing that naturally goes with those three things? Avocados.
That's discrimination.
You discriminate against tomatoes, onions, and peppers.
I don't need those hoes. Anyway.
I just don't know why you don't like them. They're so delicious.
So, I know I mentioned the other day, or in the last episode, that our second biggest audience is Sweden. And they still are. So, thanks, Sweden. our first biggest in the U.S. is actually Texas. So
Texas.
Thanks, Tejas.
I want to wake up in Texas.
All the Texas listeners just...
no place for a squirrel.
They all just... they're just cut off the podcast. They're like, fuck that.
My coworker's from Texas and we sing that song to her all the time.
Cute. Speaking of singing, so who was it? Someone at work said that I speak with, I don't know how to say it, but like, I speak like as if I know what I'm talking about, which I'm like, thanks, I do. But also, I feel like I sound like a Furby with helium, so thanks.
No, you're just very nasally.
Thank you. Just keep it going.
You sound like a young Squidward.
I love that for me. What else? Oh, someone on Instagram, I forgot their name, I'm sorry, but they asked if we have merch, and honestly, that'd be cool.
Ma'am, we're 14 episodes in. We're poor.
Well, no, not even that. I mean, we're a little baby podcast. As much as we would love to, maybe in the future.
Maybe we can make pins.
Pins.
Pins. Like my Sailor Muriel that I ordered.
We'll talk about
it. I ordered a Sailor Moon pin, but with Muriel from Courage the Cowardly Dog, and it's on my backpack, and it's the best fucking thing I've ever ordered in my life. I love it.
I believe you. But no, I know, like, with, you know, spooky season coming up, it would be convenient to have merch with our podcast name. But we're a little baby podcast and we can't afford anything. And honestly, this is very much like a side thing that we do.
This is our hobby.
Yeah. And, I'm not saying no. I'm just not saying
eventually.
I'm saying eventually.
Yeah,
exactly.
Just earlier today, like Karen, I'm reading what's in front of me.
Yikes.
And your name starts with a K. Just earlier today, Kevin was stressing out about finishing his notes. And I was like, bro, it's cool. Like, it's just our hobby. It's fine. We have a job.
Yeah.
I wish we could stay home and do research all the time for our podcast, but we have like full-time jobs.
Yeah.
Maybe one day.
I just mainly feel bad because all of our episodes are supposed to come out every other Sunday, but then I changed it and it's like, oh, every other Monday. And then now they keep coming out like at midnight on Tuesday. And I'm like...
It's because we have things to do now. So, okay. So, before, I wasn't working. Before, the place where I worked at got bought out by corporate. And I was like home. For the whole pandemic, not...
But you're not supposed to say where you worked.
Past. Anyways. So I was staying home all the time, and I had plenty of time to do research. And, like, now we're both working, and we both have, like, social lives are starting to pick back up. And so it doesn't leave very much time to, like...
That's what it is, too. I feel like we've been going out a lot more often, too. Yeah,
like, we've been hiking a couple times, and so...
We went to a wedding.
We went to a wedding.
So, the last palate cleanser topic I have is, does anyone remember the year 2000?
Yes.
I don't. next topic.
Sometimes when I think I see a really, really terrible outfit, I always think about, like, you know what? That's not that bad. Because then I look up, like, Ashley Tisdale and, like, Pink. And Christina Aguilera and what they wore in the 2000s. And I was like, bro, the fuck?
Okay, so the YouTube video that... Or the YouTube channel that I mentioned at the beginning.
Mike's Mike.
He is an Australian YouTuber. He talks about, like, just pop culture. He talks about, like, just really ridiculous shit. And I think some episodes he talks about, like... pop culture icons, like New York, Miss Tiffany Pollard, or
fucking Queen.
One of them, he judges outfits from like the 2000 VMAs or something, and I'm like, okay, mess.
All I remember is fucking Ashley Tisdale wearing a dress with jeans under them and like pizza toe shoes, like the heels that have the pizza toe, And then she has a scarf around her neck and she's wearing like a trucker hat.
Oh my God.
With and like the sequins purse.
Yes.
And I'm just like, bitch, what the fuck were you thinking? I remember thinking?
One outfit, she has a t-shirt that says, "Thou shalt spend." And I'm like, oh my God. Okay, Claire's.
And do you remember that
one? Okay, Claire's clearance section.
Who wore those pants that were like, I don't even know how they were staying up on that person's body because like the hips were like cut out. And I was like, how the fuck are those pants staying on them? And like the very top of her pubic bone was showing. And I'm like, honey, those are like very low rise. Like you should have just cut off the whole crotch part and just made thigh highs with your jeans at that point.
I think that was either pink or Kylie Minogue.
I think it was pink. I vaguely remember it being pink.
Where is she now?
She is strapped to some lines floating above her... She always does that.
Acrobatics?
Yeah, she always does the fucking acrobatics at her shows. Like, are you thinking about the SpongeBob
meme? Yes.
SpongeBob in those fucking, like, really high white boots. Mm-hmm. And, like,
the wizard outfit.
The wizard outfit. That's fucking That's pink. That is pink.
Yep.
Oh, guys, okay. We had a rehearsal dinner on Friday. We went to the Skirvin Hotel, which is like a very famous hotel here in Oklahoma City. It was pretty badass. It reminded me a lot of the Hotel Cortez on American Horror Story. That was a post made by me on Instagram. Myself, I did that.
Wow.
But yeah, it was great. And I'm trying to convince Kevin that we need to stay overnight and we need to record an episode there.
Why would I stay overnight there when my house is right here?
Because it'd be fun, and we haven't gone like on vacation for a while.
I'll think about it.
Just like a nice weekend, we go out, we like record half of the episode the night before, and then the other half of the episode the next morning, and then we report out if anything happened to us overnight. It'd be great.
Actually, okay, I'll think about it.
I'm sure our listeners would love to hear about it. And if you ever come visit OKC, please stay at the Skirvin Hotel, or there's also a bed and breakfast in Guthrie. I don't remember what it's called, but they have like a murder mystery, but that place is supposedly haunted as well. Moving on. So can I start now?
Yes.
Okay. My story is going to be about Karen Gay Silkwood.
I've heard of her.
So most of my information I got from My Favorite Murder episode 167, Bomb Grade. Also from drugs.com, history.com, This Day in History, Karen Silkwood dies in a mysterious one-car crash, www.pbs.org, and britannica.com. So I have a few sources.
Okay.
Karen Gay Silkwood was born February 19, 1946 and grew up in Nederland, Texas. So Nederland, Texas is like right on the border of Louisiana, about 90 miles east of Houston.
Shout out Tejas.
Our listeners. So Karen Silkwood was reportedly super smart and a straight A student, and she was very into chemistry. After graduating from high school, she got a full scholarship to study medical technology at Lamar University in Beaumont, Texas. She was reportedly one of the only females in her program at the time. A year into her study, she falls in love and elopes with a fellow student from her class, and they end up having three kids together. In 1972, they reportedly have substantial marital problems. Her husband was cheating on her. They end up divorcing, and part of the terms of the separation is that the husband gets full custody of the children. So she visits the children often, but ends up moving to Oklahoma City, Oklahoma. Shout out. She finds a job in Crescent, Oklahoma, which is about 45 minutes north, or 38 miles, at the Kerr McGee plant. They, at the time, were a very powerful nuclear energy-based company. They were one of the pioneers in the United States. She gets a job as a metallography technician at the plutonium plant, and she made plutonium fuel rods for nuclear reactors. I can't talk today. So she gets a job as a metallography technician at the plutonium plant. She makes plutonium fuel rods for nuclear reactors. Part of her job was to polish plutonium fuel rods packed with radioactive plutonium pellets. Interesting facts about plutonium. Mm-hmm. It is fissionable and has a half-life of 24,110 years. This is when an atom splits in two parts, either through natural decay or when instigated within a lab, it releases energy. Plutonium and all elements of higher atomic numbers are radiological poisons because of their high rate of alpha emissions and their specific absorption in bone marrow. The maximum amount of plutonium that can be indefinitely maintained in an adult with significant without significant injury is 0.008 microcurie or 0.13 micrograms. For a scale 2, eyelashes weigh 80 micrograms approximately, and 10 grains of sugar can weigh up to 750. So, like,
must nothing. Be less than
a speck of dust.
Wow.
Yes. In conclusion, we know that plutonium is a very deadly poison. It's highly radioactive. Knowing this, Kerr McGee posted in all its handbooks and on signs through the plant that stated, radiation is safe. This is only true if the plutonium doesn't come into contact with mucous membranes. If the radiation gets through your suit and comes into contact with you, it could be deadly. Now we understand that even a dust-sized speck is enough to cause lung cancer if it gets stuck in the lung. While at the plant, Karen joined the Oil, Chemical, and Atomic Workers Union. Okay, so what is a union? A labor union or trade union is an organized group of workers who unite to make decisions about conditions affecting their work. Unions work like a democracy. They hold elections for officers who make decisions on behalf of members, giving workers more power on the job. A local union is a locally based group of workers with a charter from a national or international union, such as the Service Employees International Union or United Auto Workers. A local may include workers from the same company or region. It may also have workers from the same business sector employed by different companies. Not long after she joins the union, there's a strike and it fails. A bunch of workers left the union because of this. Karen ended up staying because she got elected to the bargaining committee, and reportedly she was the first woman to have ever held a position like this.
Queen.
So as a bargaining committee
nuclear
member,
queen.
Huh?
She's a nuclear queen.
She is. As a bargaining committee member, she's charged with investigating health and safety issues at the plant. As she did, she found major infractions. She found spills, falsifications of inspection records, inadequate training, health regulation violations, and enough missing plutonium to make multiple nuclear weapons.
Shit.
So in the summer of 1974, Karen testifies to the Atomic Energy Commission in Washington, D.C. about all the findings she's had at the Kerr-McGee plant. After testifying, it is believed that she possibly made a few groups of people furious. It was the workers that had left the union and saw that she had stayed and was making their jobs harder, or the company itself, Kerr-McGee, trying to get her to stay quiet, or maybe the workers that were worried that all these government checks on the facility would get it ultimately closed down and leave them without jobs.
So she was making enemies.
Yeah, so it seemed like she had possibly have enemies everywhere.
By just telling the truth.
Yes.
By just telling the truth, she pissed off everyone.
Yep. So on November 5th, 1974, she did a routine check. She put her hand over a scanner that detected plutonium. When she did, the scanner went off. She found out that she had been exposed to over 400 times the recommended amount of plutonium on the human body. It is argued that this was done purposefully as a retaliation from one of those groups.
Mm-hmm.
This is where it starts getting weird. When the suit was tested, the radiation was found to be coming from the inside of the gloves and not on the outside or any part of the suit, other than the inside of the gloves.
Mm-hmm. Karen, she couldn't have possibly like touched it and not realized it. Like someone had to have intentionally put it within the glove.
Yes. Karen herself thought that this was done by someone in power at Kerr-McGee. It could have also been because of an existing Karen herself thought that it could be done by somebody in power at Kerr-McGee, or it could have been an existing safety issue that caused this that caused the plutonium to leak into her gloves. So it may have had something to do with something that was already happening there, but a lot of people are leaning more towards somebody in power was trying to get her to shut the fuck up.
I mean, but still, both of those are big security infractions.
Right. So between 1970 and 1975, there were 574 reported exposures to plutonium at Kerr-McGee. These were all at different varying degrees. So some of them were like just minimal exposure, and some of them were like extreme exposure. Like, this person's going to die. They probably got radiation sickness and passed away.
Mm-hmm.
After her hands make the scanner go off, she's given one of those very invasive showers very hot showers or like scrubbing her, trying to get all the radiation off of her. And it was very invasive. It was, I think, in front of other people. Mm-hmm. She was stripped naked. You know, they were washing her. And as they point out in My Favorite Murder, mm-hmm. is that this is where the term a Silkwood shower phrase was coined.
Mm-hmm.
So,
and I'm sure it was done intentionally like that.
Yes.
As a form of humiliation. As another warning. So it's like, if you do this again,
this is what's going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
So she is sent home after the shower and was asked to bring in a fecal and urine sample. When she comes back to work, her radiation levels are high again. She had no idea how this was happening, so she suggested they check her car. They checked her car and her locker, and there was no radiation present. Then Kerr McGee dispatched a decontamination squad to her house. They detected levels of plutonium in her kitchen, bathroom, and even present in some of the food in her fridge. They unnecessarily ransacked her home, they destroyed a lot of things in her home, and they took some photos of her and her kids. And the excuse was is that they were contaminated with plutonium. They had a lot of plutonium on them.
Oh my god.
Yes.
Dude, like the amount of fucking psychological damage that they left her with because of things like that. Like, your house is supposed to be the place that you feel the most safe.
Yeah.
And for them to do something like that and basically take care or take pictures of her kids are basically like, we know what your kids look like now.
Yeah. It's like, it was more of like, it was another threat. It was another mm-hmm. way to try to manipulate her.
Yeah.
Something very strange that they kind of mentioned was that, like, the reason why radiation was in her refrigerator was because she had to get a urine sample as well as a fecal sample, and that she, like, spilled the pee mm-hmm. on her hands, but didn't dry her hands, and then went to go make a sandwich out of her fridge and got it all over the bologna.
They think she just...
No, she said that. She uh-huh. said that. Yes.
She's like, sorry, I don't wash my hands.
I peed on my bologna.
She's no longer...
I don't know. It was
She's
so
no longer
weird.
The nuclear queen. She is no longer...
She. You know what I'm going to tell you? She would not have made it during this pandemic without
Absolutely
washing her hands.
Absolutely not. No, no, no. Mm-hmm. If she can so freely pee on her hand and then make herself a bologna sandwich... First of all, bologna... Ma'am,
okay,
but
fried bologna sandwiches are the fucking best.
No, we're...
So you shut the fuck up.
We're a vegan household now.
No, I'm sorry. No. We do eat vegan meals sometimes.
I was kidding.
Just to
you
switch
don't have
it up.
To,
but I like bologna.
You don't have to do this. Well, okay. It was a joke.
I want to talk about... Please because clap. I think a lot of people eat too much meat. You need to switch it up sometimes. It's okay to have tofu. It's okay to have, like, Beyond Meat burgers. You know what I mean? Like, you don't have to have meat every time.
But don't pee in your hand and then make yourself a bologna sandwich.
Yes, wash your hands, please. Okay, so anyways. On November 7th, plutonium was found in her lungs. So they sent her off to the Los Alamos testing facility in New Mexico for further testing. On November 13th, she comes back and can't deal with it anymore. She decided to go public with all the findings she made. She had gathered enough evidence documenting the plant's wrongdoing and infractions. It also contained documents that proved that Kerr McGee Nuclear Corporation was missing 98% pure bomb-grade plutonium, which was enough to make 4 bombs like the ones that went off in Hiroshima, Japan.
What the
so
fuck?
So it was plenty of radioactive material that Kerr McGee was missing.
Or enough to...
Where the fuck was this plutonium going?
Yeah, enough to alert someone.
Yes.
Like, why wouldn't you think someone...
They were, like, hiding it. They were, like, changing their inspections. They were forging their inspections to make it look like they weren't doing anything wrong and stuff like that. Like, what the fuck is wrong with them? So, but it just goes to show you how much they didn't give a fuck about workers back in the day, even though they had unions. Motherfucker, you better back the fuck up. Get out of here. Sorry, my cats are knocking my microphone. I love him, but he's annoying. Anyways, so the night of November 13th, 1974, she goes to a meeting for the union and is seen leaving. She is on the way to another meeting. Okay, so on the night of November 13th, 1974, she goes to a meeting with the union in Crescent. So they have their meeting, they're talking about what's going to happen, and she has this fucking binder, like, full of, like, paperwork that she is gonna give to somebody. So she's got this paperwork. She's got the receipts ready. She's got the screenshots. Mm-hmm. She's got the video. She's got the TikToks. Like, she's going to get ready to fuck somebody up. Mm-hmm. So she heads down to Oklahoma City because in Oklahoma City that night, she was going to meet with a New York Times reporter and a National Union representative to talk about her findings. Well, the last person to see her alive said they saw her leave, get in her car, drive away with that folder. Mm-hmm. As she was on her way to the meeting on a dark stretch of road, she drove off the road at 40 miles an hour and hit a culvert, killing her. Wow. The Oklahoma State Trooper showed up and deduced that she had fallen asleep at the wheel. In an autopsy, there were quaaludes in her system as well as alcohol. The coroner found 0.35 milligrams of metoquaalude per 100 milliliters of blood at the time of her death, twice the recommended dosage for inducing drowsiness.
So she was drugged?
Yes. For the police, it was an open and shut case. However, to her supporters and family, they suspected foul play. There were brake marks on the road where she skidded. There were dents and paint scrapes on the back of her bumper as if someone was pushing her. This was a brand new Honda that she had. Mm-hmm. A brand new red Honda that she had bought like 4 months previously to this. Mm-hmm. The documents she had on her were also never found. They disappeared. When the details of the case were released by the investigative reporters, environmentalists, nuclear power foes, feminists, and civil libertarians suspected foul play. Because of this publicity, there's a nationwide demand for an investigation. Eventually, a couple of attorneys filed a lawsuit on behalf of Karen Silkwood's kids and the father against Kerr-McGee for willful negligence leading to her plutonium contamination. Kerr-McGee's lawyers argued that Karen had stolen the plutonium and was contaminating herself to implicate the company. So they were saying that she was making herself sick so they could look bad.
That makes so much sense. Thank you really, so much for clearing that up for us.
Really. They said that Karen's capacity was compromised by the sedatives she took. She wanted to implicate the company no matter what cost.
Hmm. To what end? What would have been her end goal in that?
I don't know. I don't know, like, where they were going with this. Like, I really don't understand that that line of thinking. Now, I've seen a couple of, like, theories where the police was in on it. And so the police helped her run off the road. And then took the files because Kerr-McGee had paid them off. Or that they had paid somebody else to run her off the road. And then the police showed up and took care of the scene. And the same. They were involved, basically, is what they were saying. That the troopers that found her, like, had been paid off by Kerr-McGee to make it... To just, you know, show up and say, oh, it looks like she fell asleep. Mm-hmm. When she didn't. Well, anyways, back to this. According to reports, the lawyers that were representing the family were harassed, threatened, and physically assaulted. And this is, I think one of the family members wrote a book about what was going on, and this is reported in that book, that these lawyers were actually being physically assaulted. Their family was getting phone calls about telling them to shut up and not pursue the case any further and stuff like that. Okay, one of the witnesses skipped town and was never heard from again. And another one completed suicide before she was scheduled to be a witness.
Wow.
Yeah. In the end, the jury awarded Silkwood's estate $10.5 million. It was the largest settlement in the history of the American judicial system. This case established a new precedent in liability lawsuits. Up until this time, there was a Prince Anderson Act, which put a limit on civil liability pertaining to nuclear facilities. This case removed the limits and stopped all construction of nuclear facilities in the U.S., On appeal, Kerr-McGee took this to appeals, and on appeal, the amount was reduced to $5,000. But then Kerr-McGee wanted to only cover the damage that was done to Karen's apartment during the decontamination. So it went through, but the Supreme Court got a hold of it and overturned that ruling, that appeal. Mm-hmm. And when it was headed to retrial, they settled out of court. They gave Silkwood's estate $1.38 million, but they admitted no wrongdoing as part of the settlement. Kerr-McGee closed in 1976, and Karen Silkwood now is referred to as a martyr and one of the most important whistleblowers in history.
Wow.
Yes. Very interesting story. Very interesting movie with Meryl Streep and Cher.
Oh, two legends.
Yes.
And playing as another legend.
Yes.
Wow. She's back to being nuclear queen, even though she don't wash her hands.
Damn, could you imagine? Like, first of all, she was a woman, in like the 60s and 70s, and she's fighting this fucking huge ass corporation, and wow, she really did some stuff.
She did that. That is what she did.
It's a very interesting story. This is a story that I did for a Spanish episode, mm-hmm. because I feel like a lot of people don't know about this. Mm-hmm. Like, my mom had no idea, so I was like, I'll do it for my mom. I'll tell the story of Karen Silkwood and translate it into Spanish. This is very interesting. Yeah. So, and now I'm trying to get caught up with my Spanish stuff so I don't get behind.
This story is really insane because it really took that one person. And the other day I was listening to My Favorite Murder, an episode that they did about, oh my God, I don't remember her name. Ida B. Wells. They did basically a story about her life, and she, when they asked her, like, you're this great influential person, like, you made change in this country, you put your life at risk to, she was a reporter, she basically ran everything herself. I think she was one of the first African-American women, or the first African-American woman to be hired on by a publication company. But when they asked her, like, you know, you did all this great stuff, and she was like, don't treat me like a martyr, don't treat me like a leader, because I was just a regular person doing what was right. And I feel like Karen Silkwood was very much in that same vein. Yeah. It's like she wasn't out for, you know, like, fame or money. She wasn't doing it to get back at someone. She was really doing it because it was the right thing to do.
They were hurting other people, and like, maybe not at that moment, like, a lot of those people may have not gotten sick then, but definitely by like the, you know, the early 90s, a lot of those retired people would have had cancer. Mm-hmm. A lot of those people, like, in the late 80s would have had cancer from what? Fucking Kerr McGee.
Have you heard of the, I think it's called like the shopping cart test?
No.
Okay, so basically, I think, I don't know, remember how it starts exactly. Basically, like, a shopping cart is a good test and a good indicator as to tell on if someone is a good person.
Oh, yes, yes, yes. I know about the shopping cart test. Yes.
Because it's like, there's no reward for taking the shopping cart to the corral. There's no punishment, but you do it because you know it's right. So,
yeah,
food for thought.
Take your fucking carts back to the corral.
Absolutely.
You fucking animals. I cannot tell you how much it pisses me off when I can't park in a parking spot because there's a fucking cart there.
Yeah. Or if you know you don't, just park closer to it to begin with.
Or it's windy as fuck here in Oklahoma. If you leave a cart out in a parking lot like that without anything, like, that cart is going to fly across the parking lot and hit a fucking brand new Honda Civic.
We saw that happen, remember?
Yes, we saw that. And then, that's fucking terrible.
That's sad.
Yes. You know what I mean? Like, it just frustrates me because we work so hard for our things. Mm-hmm. Like, you work day in and day out, and like, you go out and you make this effort to get the best, like, the best deal when you're getting your car, you haggle for it. Like, it's a process. It's a lot of work.
Yeah.
And you go out and then you have to, like, research how much, like, rates are for your financing and see who's the best. And then this, you know, this fucking Karen doesn't want to take the fucking cart back to the corral. And then she just fucking leaves it there and it hits the other car. Literally. She doesn't give a fuck. Her husband works in the oil field and buys her whatever the fuck she wants. So she's driving that Mercedes around.
And she works for a multi-level marketing company. She doesn't give a fuck. She works from home. She sells hashtag fucking
fuck that. Fuck that fuck lady.
Up. I'm gonna bleep that. I'm not trying to get sued. I didn't want to drop names, but you know.
She works for that MLM. She was a bully in high school. We all know her.
Oh my God. Actually, should I share this? The other day I saw someone on my People You May Know that I went to high school with, and I was like, man, what's she up to? First of all, well, we're not friends. Honestly, I wasn't against it, but I was like, what has she been up to? She is a member of a multi-level marketing company, and all of her friends were like tagging her in posts of like, oh my God, look at, I don't know, MLM jokes. I don't know. But I was like, this is so cringy. I can't believe this is real. Like, because everyone always talks about that one person that you went to high school with.
Hashtag boss babe.
That does that. But for me, it's like I finally met that one person that I graduated with that does that. So yeah.
For me, it's a lot of people I know. It's real sad. But those products do be going off.
Shut the fuck up. I'm going to bleep that too. I'm not trying to get sued.
Why can't I talk about stuff?
You can talk about anything. Just don't drop. Don't name drop. What if they fucking sue us?
Man, what the fuck? I just...
We're a baby podcast.
I just gave them a shout out. Like the first one...
That is not a fucking shout out.
The first one, maybe. Like I was talking shit. But this other one, I was like... I said that their face... Some of their stuff goes off. Like
They're gonna email us and be like, post up.
Cease and desist.
They would email us and be like, post up. Or post up and then put like a coupon on the bottom or something.
You know... So, earlier, I went to the outlet mall to go exchange some shirts because I'm a fat bitch. Mm-hmm. Tell me why I saw a lot of dogs off of leashes just running across the streets. Please return your carts to the corral and please leash your dogs.
That's all we ask.
Those honestly. Poor babies. They were like running. They were running on the street and I'm like, oh my God, I want to get out of my car. But then they look big and mean and thick. They're like those thick dogs with like that weird head. And you know that if you get out, they're going to bite your arm.
Oh, you know?
Yeah. I could tell just by looking at them. They look like Cujo. Mm.
So I guess that's funny that we both did a true crime story.
Yeah.
I kind of want to get back into the paranormal stuff for the next episode.
That's a Spanish episode, right?
Yes. Oh, I got a good one.
I'm sorry that we disappointed you guys by doing true crime and no paranormal stuff this week.
People like true crime.
Yeah. I think we're getting closer to being able to tell personal stories, but we need a few more.
Yes.
Also, we want to know if you guys want to hear what our favorite, since it's going to be spooky season coming up really soon, would people like for us to read them scary stories? Would you guys like to hear our favorite creepypastas? We can do that too.
Yeah, we can do that.
But we can do like a special episode where we just like read stories.
Like yeah, I think we do need a lot, like a few more submissions of personal stories. So, Tejas, hello Tejas, if you have
the ball is in your court.
Sweden.
The ball is in your court.
Ja älskar er.
The ball is in your court.
Jag talar inte svenska. But the ball, fuck did the you ball just is say? In your court.
Oh.
And no, I didn't say that. But, you know, if you got personal stories, I would like to know them.
Yes, please.
In English or Swedish, you know, surprise us.
Midori, please send us your story.
Oh, yeah, Midori.
We've
been waiting for 2 weeks.
Still waiting on her email. She said she was going to send it 2 weeks ago.
Yep.
Okay, well, thanks for listening.
Please follow us on Instagram at Get Spooky Podcast and on Twitter at Get Spooky Pod. You can also email us any story suggestions or your own stories at getspookypodcast@gmail.com. Special thanks to Cody Barnes, Taylor Turner for the artwork, and Kyle Fields for the intro music. And I added this the last time.
Don't forget to tell someone you love how much they mean to you.
Absolutely.
That's a good one.
Yeah.
Bye. Because
you never know. Bye.
Bye.